Welcome to episode 2 of the Threes Company podcast. In these leadership conversations today, we speak with head football coach from Beaumont High School, Jeff Steinberg, district tech coordinator, Garrett Grace, and superintendent, Mike McNeff. There are some great answers in this conversation, so let's get started. Welcome to the Threes Company a leadership podcast. I'm on today with Garrett Grace, who is the district technology integration specialist at the Painesville School District. And I got to meet Garrett last year at probably one of the greatest meetings of all time, this rural technology group. And it's just a group of people that are just passionate about technology. And automatically, you know, you walk in and you can see that there's all these great leaders and they're pushing the good things that they want done in the classroom and helping districts become 21st century leaders and those things. And so I've had the opportunity to meet you a couple times, and we were just talking kind of before about making name changes. Did you think about a name change that you would make so that maybe you get more followers on Twitter?
No, I don't have a good one off the top of my head, but I do want to say thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here. You know, yeah, we worked together last year on that rural tech group, which is a fantastic opportunity. It's a lot of fun. You know, rural Minnesota and rural schools in general are a totally different animal than your suburban and rural schools. A lot of different intricacies to learn. So it's really good to have a group of people that, you know, tech integration isn't one of those things where we can just bop down the hallway and talk to that science teacher. Where, you know, there's four of you in that district where we have to venture out of our district, which is great because then you see a lot of different perspectives. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun working with you on that.
Yeah, it's a good place. You get a lot of great ideas. And, you know, a lot of the schools in that group, they're further ahead than a lot of places I've been at, but I've always been able to have some good takeaways. And it's probably, I feel, better than a conference sometimes because you get that independent attention from everybody, and like, oh, someone's talking about this, you kind of direct your attention that way. So it's good. Well, before we get started here, why don't you give, you got a interesting career and some goals ahead of you. Why don't you give everybody a little rundown, just your path through education and how you ended up where you are today?
So I was, I always say I was a very non-traditional student in the aspect of I didn't do well in rows. In the classroom with our desks. I really like to think outside of the box and do different things. I was always in the principal's office, but not for any major issues. It was mostly just minor things of tapping my pencil on the desk, you know, throwing my pencil in the air. Just little nuances that in the end don't completely disrupt the class. But now as a teacher, I can see why some teachers looked beyond that and said, you know, it's probably time that you go hang out with the principal for a while. So as I worked through high school and middle school, especially, I just really didn't know what I wanted to do. And, you know, I really thought, how can I enjoy life and have that work-life balance? And I really loved traveling growing up. So I spent a lot of time all over the world doing different things. And I thought, you know, being a geography teacher would be a lot of fun because I could still engage with this lifestyle. So my first 3 years, I taught high school social studies. After that, I spent a couple years at the middle school level teaching kind of an elective class, careers, college, community citizenship. So it's just a lot of life skills with middle schoolers, which I always reflect back on. It's really fun talking to a sixth grader about what they're going to do with their life and where they're going to college. They really have a lot of perspective. And then after that, I kind of moved into the tech integration world, and that school was going one-to-one with iPads at the time, and I really latched onto that and enjoyed that process so much that I switched to tech integration, and now I'm at rural Painesville and doing district integration, and I really enjoy it. I'm working on my PhD at the same time in educational leadership, and in the next few years, I hope to switch to a professorship, working with, you know, pre-leadership positions, principals, superintendents, district-level administrators. So that's kind of where my career trajectory goes. But what I've learned so far in my 10 years in education, you never can bank on one plan. It has weaved and bobbed many a times, and I think that's what I try to teach my students, is that is completely okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, that's good life lessons for those kids and get them going that way. And yeah, you've definitely, you know, you've paid your dues through a lot of different things and seen, you know, the urban setting and the rural setting. So moving forward in that professorship, you'll be able to give a lot of feedback to different teachers, and they can kind of maybe help guide them into where they'll be more successful. So that's awesome. As we move along here, who's a person that has kind of been an impact on you as a leader, you know, maybe a coach or an administrator, maybe another teacher, but who's that person that really called out to you?
You know, when I think about that question, I hear that question a lot, especially in my line of work. You know, who's that leader or that mentor that you look up to? And I would say there's not one specific person. There are many people that have amazing qualities. So my high school principal, like I said, I spent a lot of time with him. He was just a fantastic role model for me, and I really looked up to him and his educational path and his background. From there, my high school Spanish teacher just had classroom management like no other. She was one that could engage with me, and I never thought she would be able to. And I latched on to her, and she was such a great teacher. So really, when I got into the classroom, a lot of what I learned, I just reflected back on my 9th, 10th, 11th grade years taking Spanish classes with her. You know, just bits and pieces of different leaders, I think, are valuable. My high school social studies teacher just had really challenging curriculum. A fun class, don't get me wrong, completely engaged all the time, but just really challenging curriculum, and he really pushed us. And I still remember a lot of those lessons today. And then once I got to college, you know, I had a core group of geography teachers at Mankato that really just made me realize the importance of that work-life balance, and how you can always have a love for learning no matter what age you are. You just have to figure out what you love to do and then run with it and don't get stuck in that rut. And so, you know, when I hear that question, I can't pinpoint one person, but I can pinpoint about 8 different people and pull qualities from every one of those that really impacted me in the past.
Yeah, and that exactly. And I think that's always like when you talk to other people that are, you know, tremendous leaders like yourself, I think you find that they just didn't focus on one person. They're constantly looking at people and going, oh, I love this trait about you. If I can kind of mold that to my style, I'm going to be more successful in my role. So yeah, I feel the same way, that it's not ever one person, but it's multiple people that you're constantly kind of finding and taking those traits from. So that's awesome. I like that. How would you describe your leadership style to everybody?
You know, when I latched onto a quote when I first entered college, and the quote was by Winston Churchill, and the quote is, courage is what it takes to stand up and speak. Courage is also what it takes to sit down and listen. And I've always really held on to that. As a leader, it means a lot to me. You know, everyone can talk about stuff, and everyone is more than glad to share their opinion with other people. We hear it all the time. We hear it in the media. We hear it in politics. We hear it in sports. We hear it in our schools and businesses. But I think the bigger thing is, can you sit down and listen to that other side and hear where their perspective is coming from? And so I think that's really valuable. In my research, a lot of my research is focused on transformational leadership. You know, being in technology, most technology fields are transforming things. And so it's really hard to be in a technology field and not be a transformational leader. I think those go hand in hand. So that's how I would really define my leadership. But I really think the most important thing I can do is sit down and listen to others and have empathy for where they're coming from, and put myself in those shoes and say, why are they seeing it this way? It's not that it's the wrong way. It's just, why are they seeing it this way? Because I'm not seeing it this way. And then once you can reflect on that and really gauge where they're coming from and put yourself in their shoes, it doesn't mean you have to agree with that side of it. But it's really important that both sides understand where the other side is sitting on an issue.
Yeah, I think it's always that as long as a person feels like they've been heard, I think that takes it away. It's those times where it's like you're in those conversations and you're just waiting to respond. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I really think that is such a, you know, such an important thing. The, the better we listen to everybody, I think it creates less problems for all of us down the road, you know? So, this one, I know you're such a busy guy, you know, you coach, you know, you're district tech, you're doing your PhD right now. How do you balance everything? And manage to solve problems and spend time with your family. Like, you do all these things. Like, how do you do it? Just explain kind of how you break that down.
Work-life balance is different for every single person. And the nice thing about my work-life balance is a lot of my work overlaps with my life. So when you think about what I'm doing as a district technology instructor, when I'm doing that kind of work, that overlaps directly with my PhD work. So those piggyback on each other. And then in my free time, a lot of times I really enjoy reading articles about what's the latest and greatest. You know, last night I was watching Channel 2 about robotics dating back thousands of years to current robots in factories. So there's a lot of overlap there. And I think that's where some people, you know, when I read a lot of articles about work-life balance, it's where I see a lot of people struggle is when they have such a diverse amount of activities going on. Or, you know, maybe they don't love their job, but they love doing this instead. The more things overlap, the more it all just kind of blurs together, which can be a good thing, but it can also be a bad thing. And so everyone has that different balance. My balance works very well. My wife and I have a great time. We live on a lake in Minnesota. So we're always out on the lake. We water ski a few nights a week. And so you just find these activities and you really just have to figure out what works best for you.
Yeah. Prioritizing what you need. You know what I mean? There's times where, you know, you got to put in a lot of time and effort into your PhD and sometimes that's going to take away, but you know, because of who you are, you're going to go back and like, okay, I spent a lot of time here. Let's get back and do these things. So yeah, I think it's, but yeah, I just know you're a busy guy and I know I'm busy that way. And there's always something that's got to fall to the wayside sometimes. Yeah. What motivates you as a leader?
So I really enjoy the problem solving aspect of being a leader. There's always things that are popping up in every district. Everyone has their problems. And it seems like when you solve one problem, a new problem, you just hope that problem is smaller than the last problem that you dealt with. And so I think what really motivates me is getting people to advance learning for students. Really seeing that change happen in their classroom. Not every teacher is happy with how their classroom currently operates. So if something changes in their classroom, it really excites them and motivates them to keep going. And then in the end, really, it's just about making people smile. You know, we all want to enjoy life and we're only here for so many days and so many years, and we don't know when those days and years are done. And so we want to enjoy what we're doing in the moment. And we can't say, well, you know, 4 months from now, I'm going on that vacation and finally I'm going to be happy for, you know, 5 days and then it's back to the grind. You got to find joy in the grind. If you're not enjoying the grind, you got to think about what you're doing. And so as a leader, I really just want to make people enjoy where they're at and make them smile in what they're doing. And at the same time, solve some problems to make their life a little bit better. And then hope that next problem that arises is a little bit smaller than the one before. And we can just keep whittling them down.
Yeah. If you don't like solving problems, don't be in a leadership role. That's flat out how it goes.
Yeah.
This one I feel is important in this day and age. I see kind of a trend changing like with younger teachers and all that stuff. But how do you like celebrate or recognize achievements of others in your school district? Or is there anything that you do specifically?
You know, it's a variety. I think there really isn't a one size fits all approach necessarily. There's some different strategies to use, but really I find the best appreciation I can give someone to recognize their achievements is figuring out what makes that person tick and really hit on that. So it might be stopping by a gas station and getting a $4 tea of some sort, and that just makes their week. It might be a certain candy bar. It might just be a conversation, you know, for a half hour about the latest sports event. And so they just want to work those achievements into other ways. And as teachers, we know more than anything, teachers don't like to be recognized. They don't think they're doing a great job. There's always someone else who's doing a better job. They're very humble in their roles. And so it's really hard to hold a big honorary dinner and talk about teachers and talk about what they're doing. I find as I get older, those conversations become easier and easier. Just being very honest. And it's so much fun to walk into a classroom of a teacher, you know, who's just doing an amazing job. And in front of 30 students, just say, you know, Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so, do you know what they just accomplished over the past year? They just did this, this, or this. And, you know, just having those 30 students erupt in joy. I'm seeing the look on that teacher's face, partially embarrassment and partially it's just a humbling experience for them. But figuring out every person likes something a little bit different. And a lot of it is, you know, I work with some veteran teachers that we go into the makerspace for their first time and they're letting go of some classroom control. And all of a sudden you have 30 students doing different activities and oh my gosh, how are we going to manage this? They're all over the place. And then after about 20 minutes, they realize the students are 100% engaged. There's zero behavior issues. And literally I've had teachers break down in tears this year over that of just, wow, this is revolutionary. You know, in my 25 years of teaching, I have not seen something so exciting. So it's a lot of fun for that. And then at the end, just reflect on that with the students. Do you realize what your teacher just did? You know, 25 years in the classroom is a long time until all of a sudden just flip a light switch and try something new. Let's give them a round of applause for that. And so I think there's a lot of different approaches to it. And I really think it depends on the person, and that's knowing your clientele and who you're working with.
Yeah, no. And, you know, especially 25 years in a classroom, it's tough to get those teachers to make changes and things like that. And I know that you're constantly bringing new ideas. How do you kind of, or help kind of massage them into, you know, taking that leap of faith into some of the things that you bring into the school?
You know, I think the biggest thing is we are all humans and we are all people and we like to be respected as people and we all have different perspectives and there's nothing wrong with that. We might not see eye to eye on an issue, but again, relating back to what we were talking about earlier, if we can see where the other person's coming from, I think that's the most important thing. And then from there, you can build that relationship to, okay, I've worked with you for a year now and we haven't really done anything in your classroom, but you know, I know your kids' names. We talk about, you know, whatever book we just read, whatever sporting event might be happening. And then we can relate on a different issue. And then, oh, by the way, you know, I saw this really cool app that I think will help you in your classroom. Oh, great. Come on in. Let's co-teach about this and let's go over this together. Let's reflect on it. And then I really feel that's how I get the biggest buy-in. It's just, number one, it starts with that relationship. If you go in, you know, tooting your horn about that newest, latest and greatest app, and you have no idea the teacher's name even, they're instantly going to shut down and just say, you know, I've been doing this for 25 years, buddy, take a seat. That's why I think relationships are key in positions like mine in academic coaching situations.
Yeah, no doubt there. That's for sure. And then kind of our last one today, you know, anytime that you're in a leadership position, you know, there's going to be criticisms and things like, how do you handle that? Or how do you respond to the criticism of maybe from teachers or other administrators?
I think a lot of criticism is rooted in misunderstanding. And so it's perfectly fine to disagree about an issue, but misunderstanding another's position on an issue is where criticism can stem. I think to avoid that criticism, you got to keep those key stakeholders involved and inform the others about what is being discussed at all times. I'm fine having different stances on issue, but it's vital that both sides recognize the other's viewpoints. It's even better when both sides understand how the other person can see it in a different way and totally be okay with that. We don't have to agree on the issue, but at least I know where you're coming from and how you got to that opinion. And I respect that thought process and how you developed, you know, those thoughts. And so I think the more you can calm the criticism from the start and be very proactive about it on the back end, it saves a lot of time. And it also saves a lot of relationships because, again, we all just want what's best for other people. In education, we're always trying to help students. And so the more we can stay connected as a group, and every staff I've been on is a little different. Some like to every Wednesday night or every Friday night, the staff go out with each other and do an activity. Some staff aren't like that, and they just want to play cards during lunch break, you know, when they have their lunches. And so there's different things that happen, but I think being involved in those can really help. But again, easing that criticism from the start and being proactive about it, I think is the biggest way to get around some of those issues.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I know you're big on Twitter.
Yeah.
Give everybody your Twitter handle, so if they want to connect with you after this or follow you and see some of the things you're doing, give them that one
for them. Absolutely. I'm at Garrick Grace. So G-A-R-R-I-C-K, Grace, G-R-A-C-E. Love to talk to people. I'm always, you know, I do a lot of posting about ed leadership, technology and education, PhD stuff. And so I try to keep it for mostly professional use, and I don't tweet about a lot of other topics, but I love reading all sorts of stuff. So feel free to reach out. I love talking to people about stuff. You know, that's the biggest thing, is human connection is a big deal, and it's great to be able to have those conversations with others.
No, no doubt. No doubt at all. Well, I want to thank you for being on here today. Tremendous answers. You're a tremendous guy. You know, I wish you all the best of luck and with your PhD here this year. It's the year, right? We're going to get it. You're going to be done and defend it, and life
Absolutely.
Will be good, right?
I appreciate it. Thanks for all you're doing also. And these podcasts are fabulous. And keep it going. It's a great thing to hear some different perspectives from different people. Not every person has the right answer, but hopefully you can take bits and pieces from everybody's answer and find some really quality information.
Well said, man. Well said. Well, thank you again. We'll talk with you maybe
Absolutely.
Again soon.
Thanks, Mike. Have a great day.
And welcome to Three's Company Leadership Conversations. I am with head football coach at Beaumont High School, Jeff Steinberg. And Jeff actually has the claim to fame of probably knowing me the longest out of anybody, because he knew me in high school, which is one of the main reasons why I brought him on here today, is I know his leadership style and I know how he handles people, and I've followed his career, and he's just an amazing person. So Jeff, with any further ado, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit to the audience?
Thanks. I appreciate it, Mike. So really excited to be on your show. And I've been here at Beaumont High School for a year now. And prior to that, I was at several other schools in California. I guess overall, 21 years as a head football coach here. And prior to that, coaching in Canada, both at the high school level and youth sports at the University of Manitoba.
Yeah, you've been everywhere, but you're in sunny California now. So life is probably way better than it is in Minnesota right now, where we're having trouble cracking 60
It's nice. We've had our share of rain this winter and spring, but it's good.
Yeah, but you guys need the rain anyways, I think. So it probably never hurts.
Yeah.
So, well, good. Well, we'll get started here with the first question. You can, how about you explain, maybe tell us a little bit about several coaches or several people that have helped mold you into the leader that you are today?
Sure. There's probably been a lot. You know, as they say, it takes a village. But professionally, two that have had an incredible impact on me would be Brian Dobie, the head football coach at the University of Manitoba in Winnipeg, Canada. And I had the opportunity to coach with him both at the high school level and at the university. And just an incredible, incredible man. And then the other would be Rick Jones, who's the head football coach at Greenwood High School in Arkansas. And I've never coached under Rick Jones, but I've known him now for about 11 years, and we've had a great friendship, and he's been a mentor and somebody that's really helped me grow as a leader, you know, both coaching and I guess try to be a leader in the community as well.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And I know Brian, because he coached me as well, and you know, just a serious relationship driven person, and I know I see a lot of those traits in you, following you through your coaching career. Describe to us your leadership style with how you coach your players and handle students in your classroom.
Sure. I try as much as possible to be a transformational leader, which you know, is always a work in progress. But I think with that, you obviously have to care for your kids in your program, just like they're your own kids. And so with that, you have to build strong connections. So we really value building relationships with the players, because I think, you know, obviously if you want them to do anything worthy on the field, it can only be done if you have a strong relationship with that player. So we think that, you know, right from the get-go, it's important to build strong relationships. And I think part of building strong relationships is great communication, showing that you care. And in a lot of times it's showing that you care about other things other than just football, because I think if all you're doing is as a coach is just talking ball all the time, then at the end of the day, all you are is their football coach. And you could be a great football coach. They could be somebody that, you know, you could be somebody they look up to, but we want to be more than that. We want to be a really important part of their 4 years of high school here. So we work as much as possible to, you know, show that we care in other areas other than just football. So, and I think that's really what makes it a great thing, is that we really do feel like we're a strong family.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. That is just some really good stuff right there. Tell me, how you're a busy guy, you know, you got a big family. How do you balance everything? How do you get that work-life balance and kind of spread yourself out so that you can give to your players, your family, yourself, and how you handle all those things?
Yeah, so, you know, we talk to our players about, you know, we define what balance is. And I don't know if you ever have, like, there's no way you're going to balance the scales during the season. You're just here a lot. So there's that understanding of what really does balance mean. And during the off season, it better not be balanced or heavily favoring football, because otherwise you got some major problems. So it better heavily favor family and other stuff during the off season. But it's really important that when you put things in perspective and when you prioritize things, that our players understand that, look, football may be fourth on the list in the big scheme of things. And so when we're here, we don't have a lot of time when you look at, you know, the priorities and how your day goes. So let's make our 3 hours really count so that when we leave, we can move on to those other things that really take much higher priority in the big scheme of things. So for me, it's also just awesome. It's about, you know, when I'm doing my work, getting it done, not keeping guys around. Let's be really efficient at what we do. I think you know, computers and the internet have really helped in that regard, and they've probably hurt us too, I guess. But let's not just sit around just so that we can say we're working, because it's not the hours that you put in. Like they say, it's what you're putting into those hours. And then so when you get home, and this is always you know, a struggle and really takes work, is to be where you should be when you're at home and doing stuff with your family, so that you can be all in that regard too.
Yeah, pack your day before you go home, right? So you can do what you need to do. What has motivated you, you know, to become the leader that you are today?
Well, you know, I one of the things that motivates me is I think there's just a lot of great kids out there, great young men who've got incredible potential. So you take a look at that, and then you weigh against it how tough it is to grow up in this day and age as a kid. All the stuff that's pulling at them out there, and it really is a tough world to grow up in. And it's a different world than you grew up in or I grew up in. And I think that in a lot of ways, they have things way easier than we ever did. But that's part of the struggle is and the challenge to teach them about what work ethic is, because there's just not a lot of things out there anymore that may take a lot of hard work or diligence and stuff like that. So I think it's a great challenge for coaches and educators to be able to mold these kids so that they can be the leaders that we know that they can. And we can pull the scales in the other direction, in the good direction, and mold some really, really great people.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great way to put it into perspective too. That just kind of really drives it home. And it's all about, you know, again, coming back to relationships with you, which is great. I've stolen a ton of things from you in the past when I was coaching, but just touch on a few things that you do to recognize the achievements of your coaches, your players, and you know, even your family. You do just a tremendous job of this.
Thank you. Thanks. So, you know, I know that coaches do various things, and we've done stuff over the years, whether it's an award, recognition, but I think that the best way that you can recognize achievements is just giving a kid a pat on the back and telling him you really appreciate what he's doing, and that it's that it hasn't gone unnoticed. And I think when you do that, that adds to the intrinsic motivation of why certain things should be done. And so that is always number one. Now we do other things as well in our program. I think a few things that are fun during the course of the year is you know, when kids are working hard, we've got two really fun awards during the season. One's called the Rock Award, and it's literally a rock that's painted with our opponent's logo on it and our logo on it and the score of the game. And we give that to a kid who's done some great things in terms of leadership with the team, and then maybe stuff that he did on the sidelines or if he was in the game during the game. And we give that after every game. That's given out win or lose, and it's given out right after the game. So the coaches are kind of working on it during the week in terms of who's deserving of the award, and it's just finalized after the game on Friday. Then we do another award that's for linemen, and it's called the El Nasty Trench Warrior Award, and it's given out by a local restaurant who makes this incredible burrito called the El Nasty, Ramona's Restaurant. And we give that out weekly to linemen during the course of the season. And then I think at the banquet, our biggest awards are our scholar athlete awards. And we recognize those kids that are doing outstanding things in the classroom, because that shouldn't go unnoticed. That takes a lot of work to be a student athlete in this day and age with all the stuff that you're doing year round for sports now. So we make sure we recognize those kids too. And then,
I know I'm always hungry when you post those El Nasty Trench Warrior photos on Twitter.
Mike,
that burrito looks awesome.
That burrito is a thing of beauty. If anybody's ever down this way, hit me up and I will gladly take you to the restaurant and grab a bite.
Well, that's perfect. Did you have something else that you wanted to share there before we move on here to the last question?
I was going to just add that, you know, we've now transitioned, because the program's evolving. We're you know, every year, you know, now that I've been here a year, there's things we want to add, and we're now adding a community service component where our players are getting involved in the community. And we just recently, you know, at the banquet, we did a toy drive for kids that may need toys at Christmas time or the holiday time. And then we just did a helped out at one of the elementary schools at a mother-son dance, and we're going to be doing another one this coming weekend. So those are all things that, as a coach, that, you know, we get carried away with the X's and O's, and we get really busy when the season starts. But I think football's the hook. You know, we've got a pretty captivated classroom per se. And so if we can captivate them with football and teach them life lessons and give them some tools that are going to make them better people going forward, that's the great part about this game.
Yeah, keeping it bigger than the game. I love that. So that's awesome. And then the last one is always always one that, when you're put in a position of leadership, there's always criticism at some, right? We've been there when we coach it sometimes. Why did they make that call? Whatever it is. But what are some things that you do, or advice that you might have for younger coaches on how to deal with criticism?
Yeah, so something that I actually picked up from Brian Kite is, you know, when an airplane's standing still, it doesn't have to generate any power because there's no resistance at all. There's no drag. Well, as the plane picks up speed, there's going to be much more air resistance or drag. So the greater the drag, the greater the thrust. So it's really about just focusing on what you do and not listening to the noise, and just, you know, create more thrust. Keep working hard, because as you do great things, there's always going to be, I'm not talking about critique, there's always going to be criticism. And in most cases, it's unwarranted. It's just noise. It's from external forces. And it's important for a coach to have people they trust that they can lean on and have a good sounding board. And those are going to be the people that keep you on the straight and narrow, and try as much as possible not to pay attention to the so-called haters or the people that are on the outside looking in, because at the end of the day, they really don't have the eyes to be able to see what's done on a daily basis. They're only seeing bits and pieces, snapshots.
Yeah, of the whole thing. But yeah, no, that is a great, and I've never heard that one before. So I appreciate you sharing that one. That's a great, probably for me today, great takeaway on how to deal with that. So I appreciate that. Again, Coach, tell them how they can follow you on Twitter if they want to connect with you that way.
Yeah, so feel free to hit me up on Twitter. You can follow me. It's at Coach Steiny. I'm on Twitter. We're pretty active trying to promote our program and our kids and just all the great stuff about coaching football. And would be more than happy to connect with people.
That's awesome. I really appreciate you being on here. You know, you've always been someone I've looked up to, and it was great to see you last January when we were both at the USA football convention together. And it's just cool how, you know, two guys from the peg, are down in the States now doing some different things. And it's just great always to be able to follow you and see all the great things that
goes,
you're doing.
Goes both ways, my man. Really appreciate it.
Welcome to Three's Company Leadership Conversation Podcast. I am joined now with Mike McNeff, superintendent at Rugby Public Schools in North Dakota. And I have the honor with Mike, is I've known him since college, and I got to watch him move way faster in his leadership career than I did. So it's been fun to follow you and watch you grow, considering I kind of think of you as you hung out with my little brother. So, you know, you're younger than me, but you're just doing some amazing things out there. And it's good to have a Valley City State guy on the line with us right now. So how are you doing today,
I'm
Mike?
I'm doing well. It's good to be here, and very kind words. So go Vikings.
Go Vikings. There we go. Get some Viking love out there. Let's start off. Why don't you just give everyone a little rundown of your leadership career?
I think it really stems from, probably more being part of athletic teams and so on, and getting involved in that area. And, and that really started my career, I guess, and moving into a teaching role, started getting involved with some leadership activities when I was a teacher, and actually had a principal at the time that asked if I'd go to an aspiring leaders conference. And so I did. I didn't really think of going in the principalship. I wanted to be a football coach and do that for my career and teach along the side. And so started moving into that a little bit. I got my master's degree at University of North Dakota, and then eventually moved from that teaching role into the principal role in Velva, North Dakota, a small school district, about 300 kids at the time. And served as principal there for about 3 years. At that time, I just finished my master's and decided just to stay with it, continued my doctorate, completed that in 2014. And in the meantime, I had accepted my superintendent role that I'm in now currently at Rugby, small school district again, about 600 students. And I've been serving as the superintendent here for 7 years now. And been enjoying it. A lot of hats we wear as small rural school superintendent, but been fortunate to be able to have some other leadership roles, within the state and so on. And just been trying to get better every day. That's the name of the game.
That's right. That's all you can do with that. With on those parts, you kind of touched on it a little bit, but who's a maybe one, or maybe there's a couple people that have kind of impacted you to become the leader that you are today?
Well, I think early on I had teachers, when I was young, just helping shape me and push me into a you know, really out of my comfort zone. I think back, I'm not from this area in the country. I'm originally from Nevada. Had some teachers that pushed me to leave that state and come up to North Dakota, and really never looked back. And so just some really good people down there. I think of Steve Nygaard, who's a science teacher, a football coach at the time, and really instilled some good values into me. I also think of my head football coach, Coach Mack in Valley City, was definitely, you know, taught me lots of leadership skills. And then as I've moved into more formal leadership role as superintendent, you know, I have, of course, a network of people that I constantly call on. I think of Rob Leck. He is the superintendent in Jamestown, North Dakota. He's a guy that I'm constantly talking to and trying to learn from. Mike Bitz from Mandan's superintendent there. Actually just spent some time with him last week at a leadership conference, and just constantly trying to learn from them, trying to take things that, you know, maybe that work in a larger system and trying to implement them in a way that works for our school district. And then, of course, teachers along the way that I've learned from that I view as a leader or as leaders that, you know, just there's so many people. And I think that every point in my life, I've had somebody that's kind of been there that has helped shape me into who I am and who I try to continue to be.
Yeah, no doubt. There's always so many people. And in the superintendent game, you know, it's like you got to find those other superintendents that you can talk to, because there's a lot of stuff that happened day to day that you can't really share, you know, even with your leadership team. So it's good to have that support staff to keep you sane when things maybe aren't always going well, and also to reassure that things that you're doing are going really well. How would you describe to everyone out there what your leadership style is?
You know, I think from my standpoint, more of there's a lot of good readings on these, on like servant leadership. You know, I'm here to serve. I'm here to, you know, to listen you know, really listen to our teachers, our leadership, and do things how they want to do them. But I also try to obviously put my spin on things, or things that, you know, that are going to be what's better for kids, that may not be something that the adults in the building that, you know, are completely in agreement with. But I think leading through others, establishing teacher leaders is a priority for me. Having, you know, a leadership team that, you know, that includes teachers and administrators and so on. I think it's very important for the superintendent to be visible as well, trying to, you know, make sure that you're around, walking the building, having conversations with staff, especially when you have, in my district, we have two separate buildings that are not connected, making sure you spend some time at the other building that your office may not be at. So I don't know, just trying to serve people you know, and gather feedback along the way so I can improve myself. And you know, it's complex, as you know. I mean, there's a lot of things that go on that, you know, that I wish I could have done better and so on. And you learn from that and you try to do better, you know, every day.
Yeah, that's all you can do. You know, you just find that style. But I think that servant piece is really, really good, because, you know, if you're serving others, and you're going to get more people following you regardless, you know, of some of those decisions and things like that. I know you're a family man too, you know, superintendent, you do a lot of stuff in the state of North Dakota. How do you balance that work-life balance and get it so that you're not, you know, tipping the scales one side towards work?
I don't know. I gotta get better at this. I think, I don't know what is balance. And I think, you know, you gotta have a wonderful wife that, you know, is very supportive, really has kind of put her career and things like that on hold so that we can pursue this. I also think how many decisions that a superintendent's wife actually makes within the school district, as you're talking about how the day went and these things that you're working on. And, you know, she's obviously very influential to how I lead as I come back and reflect on things that are going on within our district. You know, I think I struggle all the time on this, and I don't know if I found the best way. I think I try to keep weekends for my family, I think it's always a struggle because I, you know, especially as superintendent, you know, there's a lot of events that happen outside the day, whether it's, you know, athletic to extracurricular to music to you name it, and people want to see you there. And so I really make sure that I get to those things. But I mean, there are times where I've just got to look, I haven't been home for 2, 3, 4 days or whatever. I need to spend some time with my kids. And so I've struggled with it all the way through. I don't know what the solution is other than you got to make some time and you got to disconnect. It just has to happen. Summer is a big thing for me and trying to find time for our you know, our family to get together.
Yeah, no, you gotta unplug when you can, but you know, I know you punted your coverage there in life with your wife. So you're doing well that regard too, but that's, I love what you said about, I wonder how many decisions, you know, like when you're obviously talking to your spouse, you can communicate some of those things. And it's interesting how it's like, they might give you a different perspective that you maybe weren't thinking about. So it's a good thing to mention there. What motivates you as a leader? What's driving you to be the best that you can be each day?
I think for me, it's just from where I've come from, you know, just kind of a tough upbringing and so on with some family that, you know, I grew up with, and just wanting to succeed and, you know, trying to make my way through it. And I think, you know, I'm really here because of teachers. You know, I mentioned, I had this kind of rough upbringing, but I had teachers that, you know, cared really deeply about me and helped guide me into where I've come from. Been very blessed just having people along the way, not just teachers that, I don't know, just for me, it's just sort of through a lot of hard work, no doubt, and a lot of, you know, things that we've done, but I've just had people that have been there and you know, helped guide me to where I'm at. And just, it's all about the students. I mean, you know, we got kids that have those rough upbringings and kids that come from great homes that struggle, and just want to ensure that we have the best system possible for all those kids so that they're able to, you know, find personal success, you know, social, emotional success and all those things.
Yeah, definitely a lot into it on the daily end with the kids now. Teacher Appreciation Week, National Teacher Appreciation Week. Not that all that is, you know, we try to appreciate them all the time, but how do you recognize the achievement of your staff or your other administrators in your district?
I think you got to show gratitude, and it's got to be sincere. You know, and I think that, you know, we're of course trying to do some things with Teacher Appreciation Week as well within the district, but I think just having conversations with them, you know, we've got to become more human to them. You know, we sit in often we're looked at as sitting in the ivory tower here. And, you know, I think that just trying to develop relationships with them, connecting with them, you know, talking about, hey, I saw you did this in the classroom. This was really cool. And I think also just being there to listen and not judge. And, you know, and I think that's a challenge too, because your position often gets in the way of that. It doesn't matter how you are. I think it's you, ultimately you carry this sort of, I don't know, it's not a weight, but you carry the position around with you. And I think just being aware of that and trying to become more human to them, trying to develop better relationships, and then have that, you know, those kind of sincere talks. And I'll just, you know, I think I struggle with this because it, you know, when you have 100 staff, you know, trying to get around and having and connecting deeply with all of them is a challenge. And, but I think definitely just making the effort and, you know, having conversations when you can have them with them and, you know, and being sincere about it and not just sort of blanket statements, I think are important in recognizing them.
Yeah, that's always the challenge. At least in a small school, you have a better opportunity of connecting with people. I don't know how the bigger districts necessarily, you know, find time to know everybody and connect with those. So, those are always the struggles, especially on that end. And then kind of our last one, always interesting to hear, but how do you go about responding to criticism? You know, when we're in a position like this, there sometimes people aren't going to necessarily like the decisions that we make, but how do you kind of handle it?
I remember a superintendent that I really respect, Dr. Flowers from West Fargo. I remember something he said, you know, that, you know, if you're not taking flack, you're not on target. And so I think that you're going to be, this is a political position. We know that. You know, it, and sometimes I think, you know, we can't just say, ah, that's untrue. That, you know, I think it doesn't matter how, what the statement is. You know, there's probably some truth to it. And I think we've got to constantly be self-reflecting about whatever it is said or done. I mean, I'm thinking about, I have a, my district has a 360 eval where, you know, basically they gather input from, you know, parents, teachers, students. It's an anonymous survey. And so there's lots of opportunities there to provide some criticism, I would say. But I think, you know, even if it's so far off base, you know, you got to think about, well, why do they think that? Why are they saying those things? And I, you know, is there some truth to that? And I think the minute we just start, you know, putting our head in the sand and not considering some of those, that criticism, I think then we start, you know, we really stop growing as a leader. And it's just part of the game. You know, people are going to criticize. It doesn't matter. And a lot of it is, I think it's, they don't have a relationship with you. And so how do you build that? How do you, you know, what's making them think that about you, and how can you learn from it? And so that's how I approach it. I mean, criticism's good. I think we've got to create environments too within our school districts that allow people opportunities to give you the truth. You know, I think Jim Collins, always, you know, Good to Great, like excellent leadership book. You know, I always remember the point in there of looking under rocks for squiggly things. We don't want to look under that rock because there might be something under there that we don't want to see. And I think that's, we've got to be open to that and you know, open to grow.
No doubt. That's such a good, like your perspective on that so much, because it is hard, because, you know, some people take it super personal, but I do believe, like, even in those anonymous surveys, if it's in writing, you know, there's probably some truth to it. So it's like you said, you know, let's investigate it. Let's look deeper into it and figure out maybe why they're thinking this, because it's not obviously that extreme, but you figure there's always a solution to that. So, well, Mike, I appreciate your time. I know you're a busy guy. They can follow you at MD McNeff, MCNEFF on Twitter if they want to follow you around. I follow you because you do some good things there with your school, and it's always good to keep tabs on everybody from the college days and see how they're all doing that way. But I just want to say thank you very much for being on this podcast, and I thought your answers were tremendous today.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for contacting me, and it was good. Enjoyed it.
Thanks again.
See you, Mike.
Thanks for joining us on episode 2 today. I really appreciate everybody's support and how it's taken off. Episode 1 was a great hit. We're hoping that episode 2 would be the same. If you want, you can hit us up with a voice message if there's questions you want me to ask. In our next episode, we're going to have 3 very strong female leaders that are going to be answering questions. So we're looking forward to watching this thing grow as we go along. Thanks again for your support.